Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Handful by C.R. Grissom, narrated by Anastasia Whatley and Nelson Hobbs. Chapter 1. Kirsty Dernan. December. Cross-country travel during the week between the holidays requires stamina, patience, and an emergency pair of underwear tucked in your carry-on. I have zero patience, but according to my dead Granny Kay, I'm as full as a tick when it comes to stamina. The two-story wall of glass allows sunlight to illuminate the area inside the arrivals terminal at San Jose International Airport. The brightness highlights the frenetic motion of people. Baggage claim can only be described in one word: chaos. People jostle each other for space around each carousel like cash is about to roll out instead of luggage. I'm about to meet a lot of people I'll be going to school with next September. It's exciting, but I'm nervous, too. This week will be my opportunity to become friends with all the people in Faith's world. In a way, it's surreal. For the longest time, it was just me and my best friend, Faith. The two of us against a bunch of buttheads we went to school with. Now there's an entire group of people in her life. A pang strikes my heart. I hope I still have a place in my bestie's life by the time I transfer here. Someone snorts behind me. Then I hear a few hushed giggles, which makes me glance over to the other baggage station. What appears to be a sex toy wiggles its way around the carousel. I'm not sure if the thing happened to turn on, or if some baggage handler with a sick sense of humor decided to flip it to live mode, but I'm mesmerized by its frenetic gyrating. I'm puzzled by the numerous squid-like tentacles on the apparatus, but not in a judgy way. I mean, I can't see the need for that many appendages, but I haven't made myself pleasure an Olympic sport. That device is out of my league, belonging to a gold medalist if I've ever seen one. That's so unsanitary. Stan is ruined. A gorgeous brunette behind me cries out. I do a double take when I recognize the young woman. She's a beauty influencer on Kickback. Is it Stan the Squid or Stan the Sex Cephalopod, her most zealous fan? I roll my lips inward because I don't want to laugh. Stan looks like a comfort animal of the finest sort. My respect for the beauty diva goes way up.
What's that, Mama?
A little girl about my baby brother's ripe age of 5 asks in the hushed lull. I glance at the little girl's mama waiting for her answer. I'm interested, too, since I might need a fast comeback if I ever find myself in a similar situation.
It's a bath toy, Brittany.
Nice save.
I want one. I want one. I want one!
Don't we all, sweetheart?
Another woman near us agrees, tongue-in-cheek. Truth. My banana-yellow director of pleasure, named after my favorite minion, remains safely at home. No chance of Kevin buzzing down the conveyor for all to see. I'm grateful for the spared indignity. The influencer's friend or assistant scrambles to retrieve Stan. Poor Squid, that's just wrong. I glance away. No one touches Kevin except me. And my baby brother, but that was only one time, before I learned to store Kevin out of Colin's reach. He hadn't learned to talk yet, so Mom never heard about his discovery. Small blessings. It's impossible not to stare at the spectacle. Someone squeezes next to me on my right. I can't glance away from the person valiantly fighting to stuff the sizable squid into her laptop bag, while the diva flaps her arms, doing her best to direct the proceedings. The person who scooted in next to me might have done so for a front-row seat to the stand show. At least that's my assumption, since I haven't glanced their way. Meanwhile, the poor gal trying to wrestle Stan into her bag reminds me of my own frustration trying to wrestle Colin, affectionately nicknamed the Turd, into pajamas back in his toddler days. No small feat. The person beside me says,
"The most interesting people can be found at the airport."
His voice seems to float down from far above me. There are two things that feed a crush for me: a distinctive voice and the shape of a man's hands. I have a thing about hands. I have no idea why. I know it's silly, but it is what it is. The voice makes me pause. His voice is deep and smooth, like a shot of top-shelf tequila. Tangy, delicious. Totally, I agree, still not glancing in his direction. Inevitably, his voice and face won't match, or he'll be old enough to be my father. My phone trills with a text. I check the screen. It's from Faith, who patiently waits for me in the cell phone lot. Do you have your bag? I glance at the carousel to my left and don't see my bag. Bright orange and turquoise tends to stand out among the blues, grays, and blacks of standard-issue suitcase colors. There are fewer bags on the conveyor. My eyebrows pinch together with worry. Hiking my heavy backpack higher on my shoulder, I type a reply. No sign of it yet. The girl wrestling the vibrator gives up and braces Stan under her arm. It starts to gyrate again, making her jump. I clamp my hand over my mouth as soon as the snicker escapes. Damn, that is one formidable sex toy. The guy beside me coughs to cover his laugh. The sound tugs a grin from me. I watch the dynamic duo weave their way through the crowd at the terminal, turning back to my own carousel once I lose sight of them. My heart sinks. I realize that while I'd been watching the squid showcase, only 4 suitcases remained circling my baggage carousel. My bag isn't among them. Shit.
Problem?
I glance up, and farther up, and finally make eye contact with the person next to me, who happens to be the finest specimen of man flesh I've seen in real life. In the grand scheme, 20 isn't all that old, but it's still a significant amount of time. My breath hitches. He's age-appropriate. His hair is a light cinnamon brown that probably bleaches to a more gingery color in the summer sun. He reminds me of a younger version of the actor who plays Jamie Fraser in the Outlander series, but this guy looms even larger. I happen to glance at his hands. Holy shit, I shouldn't have. His hands are large. Long fingers with scrapes along the knuckles add ruggedness to his almost elegant hands. When our eyes meet, his navy blue eyes resemble the color of the deepest part of the ocean, an abyss that renders me incapable of glancing away. A shiver works its way down my spine. My phone buzzes in my back pocket, distracting me. I break eye contact to check the screen. Faith sent another text. Keep an eye out for Everest. He went inside to find you. Then it hits me. The exemplar of male beauty standing next to me has a Fortis University Gladiators hoodie on with the motto Fortis Fortuna Adiuvat, screen printed under an icon of a sword. Hilt positioned between his pecs, blade pointing down toward Nirvana. I force my gaze not to drop lower. His arms are huge, the circumference certainly bigger than my thighs. Everest, I presume?
At your service.
He smiles at me. Something deep inside my core pulls tight. Climb every mountain sung by the Mother Abbess to Julie Andrews and the Sound of Music plays in my head, full volume. This could be a problem. Everest is Faith's friend and her boyfriend's teammate. Unacceptable. He's so pretty, a voice inside my head whines. No, no, no. Men are off limits. Even a gorgeous man who looks like one of my favorite actors. Didn't Daniel teach you anything? I shake my head to clear my thoughts. Then I breathe deep. I'm Kirsty. It's nice to meet you, I murmur, shoving my right hand at him. When his hand clasps mine, the current travels up my arm and down my chest, settling low in my core to zap my lady bits. Holy cow! It's like his hand is a lightning rod. One touch and he nearly blasted off the latch to my jewelry box. I release my grip before my underpants combust. His pupils dilate and the side of his mouth lifts in a grin.
Likewise.
He's freaking potent. Knock it off,
I scold myself, shoving my tingling hand into the front pocket of my jeans. My suitcase seems to be missing in action. I need to find the airline's baggage desk.
It's this way,
he assures me, leading me to the far side of the terminal. He's tall, like basketball player tall. I have to take two steps to one of his just to keep pace with him. I'm careful not to walk too close in order to avoid getting knocked off my feet, in both a literal and figurative sense. Finding my luggage is a higher priority than the hottie next to me. At least that's what I'm telling myself. It contains all the clothing I need for this week-long visit with my bestie. Normally missing clothes wouldn't be a super huge issue, but this week is different because of the wedding. It's formal, and I need my dress. Ugh.
How was your flight?
Everest asks. Long day for me. I had to wake up at 3 this morning, Boston time. Mentioning it makes me fight back a yawn. I'll need to caffeinate soon.
I can take care of that.
I bet you can take care of many things. The voice inside my head purrs. He walks me to the airline claim desk, but doesn't go up to the counter. His respect for my privacy surprises me. My ex would have tried to take over, assuming that being male made him genetically qualified to take the lead, which would have forced me to elbow him out of the way. Maybe Everest didn't take control because we aren't in a relationship and haven't had sex. Dang, the thought shoots prurient images into my brain about having him naked and under me. Stan's twin joining us for added fun and frolic. Everest embodies the sexual Olympian type. Heat spreads low in my belly. Stop! Focus! I step up to the counter and wait for the airline employee to acknowledge me. Damn it! Why didn't I pack my dress into my backpack? Because it would have arrived in a tight, wrinkled ball of fabric, that's why. Shit, shit, shit! My phone buzzes again. Any updates? Faith asks. My bag didn't make it. I add the sad face emoji 3 times to properly convey my current emotional state. Faith adds the dislike reaction to my text and sends a sympathetic, "No! I'm screwed," I text back. She types, "Do you need me to park and come inside to help?" "No, Everest found me. I'm waiting to talk to the baggage dude." I type while my heart careens inside my chest like a pinball racking up 1,000,000 points. I don't share my obvious attraction for Everest with Faith, confident I'll have my traitorous body under control soon. The middle-aged and harassed-looking man scrambles behind the desk, toggling between 2 computers and muttering something under his breath that I can't quite catch. I clear my throat. "Excuse me, sir." He glances at me. Annoyance draws his eyebrows together and compresses his lips into a flat line.
"Help you?"
"My bag didn't arrive with my flight." Saying it out loud makes my hands shake, and I press my palms against my denim-clad thighs. Both his index fingers peck at the keyboard. "Name? Kirsten Dernan." He barks at me for different things. The flight number, my ID, the receipt for the bag I received when I checked my bag with the airline at Logan this morning. I drop my backpack to the counter and start rummaging through the front pocket for the ticket I never thought I'd need again. Ever since Colin was born, my backpack became second storage for age-appropriate paraphernalia. Extra wet wipes, a snack-sized packet of fish-shaped crackers, an 8-pack of crayons, and other stuff. I'd cleared my backpack before the trip, but I missed the front pocket. I finally find the slip stuck to the back of a crushed box of raisins and pass it to him.
"Your bag missed the connection in Dallas-Fort Worth."
He makes eye contact with me.
"It's being routed here. We'll call you when it arrives. You can choose to come back here or give the address where you're staying and we'll deliver it."
"Call me, please." I fail miserably at not sounding desperate. He repeats my mobile number to me after I recite it to him. I breathe a sigh of relief. "That's correct. Thank you for your help." Stepping away from the baggage desk with my backpack hiked on my shoulder, I send a text to Faith. "No luggage. We'll be outside soon." Everest joins me.
"Any news?"
"My bag didn't make the connection. I'll have to come back here when it arrives.
Bummer. No worries, though,
he assures me.
We'll add it to our to-do list for the day.
Thanks. I ask the question that's at the top of my mind. I don't mean to sound rude, but why are you here?
Not rude, reasonable.
He nods.
I had to drop off my ride for a smog test this morning. Tags are due.
I'm tired, but I think he left something out. I don't ask him to clarify. I need to rethink, regroup, and harness my hormones. My breakup with Daniel is only 2 weeks old. I'm not looking for a rebound. Not with a friend of a friend. Someone I'll be linked to once I transfer to Fortis next August. Since he's definitely part of Faith's circle at Fortis, and by extension, mine. I have to stay focused on my degree, or my dead Granny Kay will haunt me for the rest of my life, screaming, "Don't be like your mama, Christy. Don't trade your education for a wedding ring and a newborn." My shoulder blades twitch. We step outside and make our way to the far right. It feels more like spring than winter here. It's about 45 degrees warmer than back home. My sweater feels too thick for the weather, and I regret not dressing in layers for my flight. The early afternoon sun shines bright enough for me to hunt through my backpack for sunglasses, and sliding them on my face reduces the glare. The airport remains busy with post-Christmas travel. It's my second trip here, courtesy of Faith's dad. I'm part of her Christmas gift. Ever since Faith moved here to attend Fortis, she's asked her dad to fly me out to spend the week after Christmas with her. I now like to remind Faith I'm the one gift she can't return. There's a definite advantage to Everest's height. He's hard to miss, even among the crowds of people and luggage clogging the curbside. Faith pulled over almost as soon as he lifted his arm.
You should sit up front with Faith,
he offers, opening the passenger door. Grinning at him, I ask, and you'll shoehorn yourself into the back?
I'll sit behind you. It'll give me plenty of space.
He ducks into the car to move the front seat forward while Faith runs around the car to capture me in a tight hug. You're here! She rocks me in her arms. It's been forever. I squeeze her back. Missed you. Merry belated Christmas. Happy Boxing Day! Channeling Granny Kay, I wail theatrically in an exaggerated drawl. Sugar, your gift's in my missing luggage along with my dress for the wedding. Damn, that's good. She grins. I can almost smell magnolias. Never fear, we have 5 days until the big day. Let's hope it's enough time for the airline to cough it up. Faith's hair falls past her shoulders, shiny and blown out. She's changed so much since she first came to Fortis. She's stunning and confident. It makes my heart swell. After third grade, she wouldn't wear anything except oversized hoodies that hit her knees and joggers that were equally huge to hide her real shape. Systematic bullying will do that to you. I hear a grunt and glance around Faith at the car. Everest has managed to stuff himself into the back seat. His knees are up around his ears, but he shoots me a wink.
Okay, ladies. I'm not sure how long I'll be able to hold this position without splitting my pants.
Damn, Everest. I try to hold back the giggle and fail. You do a great impersonation of a cinnamon roll.
Chapter 2 Eric McBride, a.k.a. Everest. I've been sucker-punched by someone who belongs in a Disney movie. I'm surprised pixie dust doesn't sparkle around her like an aura. 10 minutes in her company, and I'm already attracted. Shit, if I'm being honest, Kirsty hooked me at first glance. Boxed into the back seat of the car behind Kirsty and Faith, knees tickling my earlobes, isn't an ideal flirting position. Not that I'll act on my attraction. Charlene took off for London a little more than a week ago. Am I hurting over it? Not really. I knew about her decision to transfer almost as soon as she did. I made peace with the fact that our relationship was temporary months ago. We had some good times, and times that could be described as not so good. Charlene never understood my commitment to the team didn't end when I left Gladiator Coliseum. My brothers, the men who take the field with me, are my family. This one difference obliterated our chances at a lasting relationship. Well, and the fact she left the country. My lips curve, listening to Faith and Kirsty catch up with each other, wicked fast chatter and quick laughter, enjoying their code speak about people back home. These two are sisters without common blood. Maybe that's why there isn't any animosity layered in their exchange. Unlike my five sisters, whose conversations are pitted with accusations of past crimes and current charges of clothing appropriation, most are hurled at Marla, the baby of our family, and the most entitled of our brood. My sisters will fight each other bloody, but band together if anyone tries to come between or after them. Gotta love family. Kirsty shoots me a quick grin over her shoulder. Doing okay back there, Everest? Are we going to need to grease you up to get you out? Now there's an image. I wouldn't say no. Which means I'm forced to ignore the thought. I'm sure we won't have to resort to extreme measures. Her smirk reveals a dimple just south of the left corner of her lower lip. Damn. I'm a sucker for dimples. Especially the kind that pop without a grin. Where's your mechanic? Faith meets my gaze in the rearview mirror, a contemplative look in her eyes. When I grin at her reflection, Faith's left eyebrow hikes toward her hairline, independent of its mate. Busted. Faith knows me well. I assume she's clued in to my attraction for Kirsty. Don't take the freeway. Follow the signs to Coleman. Turn left at the light, Lola. Got it. I've always called Faith Lola. I met her, and the pet name jumped in my brain. She's Lola, and that's it. Her gaze meets mine again in the mirror. I hear her unspoken warning to behave and wink at her. The place is on Coleman, about a mile down. Freitas Repair and Collision Specialists. Kirsty twists in her seat to ask, Tell me, what do you do in the off-season? Her light green eyes, nearly feline, sparkle. I feel her gaze in my gut, but manage to answer. Condition, code, the usual. You?
I don't have an off-season.
I'm sure you don't. But I simply nod instead of sharing that opinion. Not acting on attraction isn't a well-honed skill of mine, but in Kirsty's case, I'll have to do better. She shrugs.
School starts up again almost as soon as I get back to Newford.
Have you declared a major, or are you keeping your options open?
Biology.
Interesting. Smart women are my kryptonite. In what field?
Epidemiology. I want to work in a dark lab like a superhero, before inciting incident.
My smile goes wide. I can see you as a superhero. She levels a glance at me. Her dimple pops with her smirk.
Am I wearing a cape?
Her question conjures an image of Kirsty wearing something form-fitting and sexy. My abs go tight. No. Faith pulls into the mechanic's lot. Kirsty jumps out of the car when Faith slides into a spot and opens the passenger door.
Which of my superpowers should I use to extricate you?
She asks.
Drop the seat forward, smartass.
I feel instant relief when the seat moves forward and I gain a few more inches to maneuver my legs out of the back seat.
The more you take, the more you leave behind. What am I?
Kirsty raises both eyebrows. Her tongue touches the corner of her lip while she works the riddle out. The simple gesture tugs at me.
Footsteps? She answers.
Yep. Gotta move. I'm glad to get distance and a little time away from Kirsty. Enough to get myself under control. Mostly, at any rate. Her gravitational pull is irresistible. I pay Jorge for the smog test. He squeezed me in this morning once I realized I had to have it done in order to get the Baja registered. Jorge's wizardry with cars is the reason I trust him with my ride. No way I'd let anyone else touch my Bronco. This vehicle
has never let me down. Neither has Jorge. Firing up the engine, I head over to Shades of Willow Glen, the retirement village where Phoebe's grandmother lives. We'll move Phoebe's stuff into Faith's dorm room, the very spot Charlene, my ex, vacated days ago. The move shouldn't take too much time today. Between TJCW and myself, we should get Phoebe squared away in her new digs without much trouble. We'll need to manage a ride back to the airport for Kirsty whenever her luggage arrives. I turn into the 7-Eleven parking lot to pick up an energy drink for Kirsty and make good on my promise to help her caffeinate. Choosing a recovery-style lemonade flavor energy drink with taurine, vitamin B, and electrolytes, I pay and leave the store. Behind the wheel again, I drive toward the retirement village and try to pin down what it is about Kirsty that draws me in. She's gorgeous, but it's not the sum total of her appeal. Her spark, I decide. That's what threw the flag and blew the whistle for me. I felt it the first time she glanced at me, after the giant squid dildo got carted away. More dildong than its lesser-known and tamer cousin, the vibrator. That beast was impressive. Best in self-gratification class. Probably takes a car battery to power up. I grin at the memory. Being attracted to someone whose head doesn't clear my pecs is a definite first for me. I sigh. That's enough brain time thinking about Faith's best friend. Pulling into the lot, I find a parking spot in the visitor section. I turn off the ignition and call my teammate, TJ, who dates Phoebe. I'm here. Are we ready to roll?
Getting there. Come on up and we'll get all the way done,
TJ says before disconnecting the call. The grounds are colorful, even in late December. Winter-blooming aloe with sharp spiked edges grows in flower beds that border the paths winding around the condo buildings. Its red stalks add color against the faded green of grass going dormant. Mom grows aloe, her go-to for sunburns and zits. If I had a dime for every time Mom swiped aloe across my face, I'd have a lot of dimes. Christmas wreaths hang on most condo doors. Italian cypress trees range around the complex's fence and provide additional privacy. White lights wind around them. The clear plastic bulbs sparkle when touched by the weakening sunlight. Phoebe's grandmother lives on the first floor. I hear laughter before I turn the corner. TJ, his right arm wrapped around Phoebe, gestures with his left hand. Faith bends forward, cracking up at whatever he said.
Look at you, CW remarks when he bends down to hug Kirsty. You must have grown an eighth of an inch since I last saw you.
Huh, she scoffs. Never a shortage of jokes about my height.
I see what you did there, he laughs.
Faith elbows CW in the gut. Kirsty stands next to Faith. A wide grin stretches across her face when CW lets out a loud oof sound. Her smile nearly trips me up. I lock my knees, then let out a breath. What am I, a randy 12-year-old? Get a grip. Kirsty glances over. She's the first to notice me. She tilts her chin in a quick acknowledgement. I mimic her gesture. Her dimple pops when her mouth tips into a smirk. I'm either going to act on this attraction or develop a resistance to her damn dimple. The sun halos her head, burnishing her long blonde hair into a shimmering gold. The urge to thread my fingers through the bright strands almost overwhelms me. Shit. I pass Kirsty the energy drink.
Hey, thanks.
She cracks open the can.
What do I owe you?
Respect? Admiration? You pick. She snickers.
I'll get back to you on that.
I sidle up next to TJ. He's at the outer edge of the group, standing closest to Phoebe's grandmother. Hello, Grams.
Hello, dear.
She leans in to give me a side hug.
Thank you for helping Phoebe move today.
Grams, I'm here to serve. No thanks required. Agnes, Phoebe's honorary granny, says under her breath,
If I were 20 years younger, I'd let you serve.
I shoot Agnes a wink. She's what Mom would call a firecracker. Phoebe snorts.
Behave, Agnes. What will James think? That he has to stay on his toes to keep me?
Agnes answers smugly.
I heard that, Agnes.
James, her boyfriend.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?